position number 4474, reel 3.
Mr. Whitewick, reel 3. How long were you in Egypt in this period of 1935-36?
We did the normal, the 3 months in Alex from December 35 to March 36. We then went up to Moesca in the March to become part of the garrison. And at this period, the situation had been worsening in the Middle East from the point of view, or in Palestine in particular, of thousands of refugees pouring in from Germany mainly, of course, and the whole situation becoming more political. And we were then continually on standby for any eventuality that might happen in Palestine. The armed forces had been increased to, I think, a division then in Palestine because of the situation, and it was thought necessary to have stronger forces there, of which they always had reserves very close by in Egypt anyway. And we were on standby continually from the time we landed in Moesca right until we eventually went back to Palestine on active service in May 1936, of which the general alarm blew, and the next thing we knew we were equipment on and on the train over Kantara and into Palestine. We went down to a tented camp just outside Haifa at the foot of Mount Carmel, and once again our main job was to keep the elements apart. By elements I mean the Jew and the Arab, and by virtue of so many Jews coming into Palestine, they were being put into camps, of which we were guarding because of the hostilities of the Arab now. It was becoming organised, of course, because it had now become very political. And our main job was to keep them apart, protect the Jews, protect them because they had now become the object of everything the Arab didn't want, and they wanted to kick them out. And they had been slung out of Germany in the main, and of course had become deserted human beings that were pushed around. I thought the only place for them was in Palestine, which really was never big enough to take them anyway, but they thought it was their home, I suppose, as the Jew always has. And they poured it in their thousands, and this created a situation that slowly grew over the months. It was becoming quite serious, and the poor old British Army once again had to step in, and I think by virtue of its training and discipline, again avoided what could have been a bloodbath. And in fact nothing really serious ever really happened. Our main job, as I said, was to keep them apart. We used to have to go out on patrols. We would go into the hills and sort out problems in villages of Arabs and Jews that had flared up. We'd done a lot of patrolling. We used to form a guard on Mount Carmel every night. We were stationed on the main line from Haifa, railway line from Haifa to Jerusalem, Tel Aviv, etc., etc. And the Arabs by this time had become hostile to us as well, because they turned their wrath on us, I suppose, for defending the Jew. We weren't in fact defending the Jew, we were protecting the Jew and protecting the Arab and just keeping them apart, I think. But of course the Arab didn't like the fact that we were allowing all the Jews in that were coming in. and taking up their territory, which has always been a contention of Muslim, hasn't it? Has always caused trouble ever since life started. And that was our main job down there. Incidentally, I was on guard on Mount Carmel one particular night, and in the morning we were at stand to, dawn, as always happened with the British Army, of course. Dusk and dawn we stood to. And the guard commander came round, and I in fact had my back to the so-called front, the enemy then. And the guard commander said, what are you doing, Whiteley? And I said, well, you know, just tossing a few stones around. So he said, you've got your back to the enemy. So one or two words passed between us, of which, of course, I was in the wrong and said all the wrong things. And that was that for a little while. When we were relieved of our guard duties and got back to our camp, I was promptly put in the guard room. Went before my company commander and charged with having my back to the enemy. Eventually went before the CO, who promptly gave me 10 days field punishment. I thought I'd got a medal or something. You know, I've been put on leave because I'd never heard of field punishment. And that field punishment, in fact, entailed my being chained to a post out in the desert when I wasn't out with my platoon on some exercise or other and doing chores in the cookhouse and all that sort of thing. And I took very kindly to the Jews on this occasion because they made a complaint to the CO and said it was inhuman for a British soldier to be chained to a pole in the middle of the desert in the heat of the sun and all that sort of thing. So he probably took me down from that, and he probably thought, well, it might be. It certainly might be to civilians anyway. They would think that. So he probably put me in a tent. And I'm now sort of talking of the times when my platoon or whatever it was wasn't out on some exercise or other.
Did you feel it was inhuman?
Yes, I did. Yeah, I thought it was pretty tough. But nevertheless, I'd done something wrong. And discipline was such that if you did wrong, then you were punished. And you expected to be punished. It was a standardised discipline in the army, which everyone understood. And I think it was right, because it was fair. Because you didn't get let off in one place for a certain thing and get punished extraordinary in another for the same sort of thing. But field punishment, you know, active service, good God, to a young soldier, I was still only 19 at the time. Anyway, during this period of punishment, I used to be chained to the tent I said, and at night, for instance, the guard would come in and occupy the particular tent I was in. And a lot of my friends would come on guard and they would fling me a sandwich over the partition. And invariably I'd catch the roll and the egg would go in the sand or vice versa. Sometimes, and in fact on one occasion, one of the lads threw a cigarette over and I was fast asleep and it landed on my shorts, just on my navel. And of course, naturally, I woke up and shouted, help, so I thought I was on fire. Another occasion, I was out doing some chores and the desert looks the same, of course, all over. It's just sand, 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 sand. Whilst I was away, for some reason or other, they'd moved the camp. I don't quite know why. And when I went back to the guard room, there was a friend of mine in there. And I asked him why, and he said he didn't know. But the previous evening, he'd been in the canteen with a few more friends of mine, and they said, oh, we would think Loss would like some cigarettes. Perhaps he hasn't got any cigarettes. He said, so I thought I'd go and get you some cigarettes out of the tent where I was, where I had some. Having got the cigarettes, I realised you might not have any matches. So there was a box of matches on the corporal's bed, so I picked them up and bought them and gave them to you. And I didn't want to smoke, so I just dug them in the sand, you see. As I say, we got up next morning, I went and done my chores. And when we came back, the tent had gone. Consequently, the cigarettes and matches are buried in the sand, not knowing just where they were. This friend of mine was taken up before the commanding officer and charged with stealing 50 million note, which in fact was in the money in the box of matches. He didn't realise that, of course, he didn't know. But he got away with it because I think the CEO understood the whole situation. I think he probably had a very good laugh about it. But the reason I was given field punishment was to set an example to the battalion. After it was all over, the adjutant sent for me and, in fact, congratulated me on my performance under this terrible strain. It was really, it was tough, you know. And said that they'd made an example of because they thought it was necessary to make the battalion realise we were on active service. And things just had to be tough, and that was that. So it never appeared on my record or so. I never lost any pay and was congratulated, but still done with 10 days field punishment. Which I think, in fact, I still see the adjutant. I went to see him a few months ago up in Norfolk. And we often talk about it. So, very good talking point.
Well, when you were tied to this post, did you say there was a partition around it?
Well, there was a partition between me and, like, that... Oh, the other side of that partition that you have there would be the guard. During the day, of course, there would have just been a policeman on duty. There was another occasion when I was in this tent all on my own and the fire alarm went. And I was chained to the pole. So you could imagine me hearing this fire alarm go, being chained to this pole in the tent all on my own, trying to lift the pole out of the ground, thinking I'm going to be burnt to death. But in fact, of course, it never came to that. But I did make a complaint about that, and it was thought of that in future fire calls or fire alarms or any fire, I should be released straight away because it could have been a nasty situation.
So you were chained to a tent pole?
Yes.
So you weren't actually exposed to the sun's rays?
Not then, I wasn't. But earlier on, I was.
Earlier on, you were chained to a
pole out in the desert,
out in the sun itself.
Yeah. Which would probably last for an hour or so, you know, because invariably we were out. Things were happening and you'd fly to your lorries and away you'd go. There'd be a spot of bother somewhere where you had to go and part someone from somebody else. And then when you came back, you had to go and do chores and that sort of thing. So really, you weren't sort of chained to a pole all through the heat of the day, anyway. Not that I thought the 10 minutes wasn't enough, obviously. Because it was pretty warm then. Things were hotting up there. You can think, I suppose you're in the 70s now, in March. Now, this was May, so it'd be very much hotter still. But there you are, lesson well learned. And I think to a battalion of young soldiers, first time on active service, not really knowing what was going to happen to them, something like that was necessary. Unfortunately, I was the chap that was... had to suffer the consequences of my action and set this form of example, which may have paid off. And on top of that, you know, they were being worked very hard. There was a lack of sleep. They were getting about two or three nights sleep. That was all through a week. And it was essential for that the morale was kept up. And the only way you can do that with soldiers is having the right kind of discipline and being looked after properly. And it was there because of this, because of an understanding, because of the toughness of the situation and all that sort of thing. It gives you something that's very hard to explain to people that have never experienced it.
You said that one of the jobs you had to do on active service in Palestine was to clear Arab villages. What was that?
Well, you would probably have had situation arising where there was Jews started up a village of their own, and the Arab resented it, obviously, so he would have thought, well, we've got to do something about this, and then he would start to try and clear them out. And the local authority, whatever that might be, would first of all try to talk to them about it and say, well, they've got to live somewhere or something like that, and try and paint a picture of living together. But as I say, by this stage, of course, the Arab was getting the feeling that he was being pushed out anyway. And they would then start trouble. So we would be sent for, being asked by the civilian then to come and take over. And in any case, we were on military, we were on active service at this stage, so presumably there was a martial law was in existence almost. So the situation would arise where we'd probably have to move the Arabs out, and which used to go off pretty well. There was some sort of no shooting or... Well, so they resented it, of course.
Didn't they resist or show that...
No, you know, they'd have been rather foolish, wouldn't they? They hadn't got the armed power or the military strength to do very much about it. They had probably had small gangs of armed Arabs roaming around, causing trouble. But at this stage, there wasn't sort of any organised resistance against the British Army at all. We had another incident when I was on guard at on Mount Carmel. The orderly officer used to come round during the night at some time or other, never telling anyone, obviously, other than possibly phoning up the guardroom, which he had to do, in fact, to say that he would be coming along and would go round visiting the posts to see that the sentries were doing their job. On this particular night, the orderly officer had a Royal Army Ordnance Corps officer accompanying him merely from an information point of view, an exercise for the Royal Army Ordnance Corps chap to see what went on from an orderly officer's point of view or being on active service, etc., etc. And instead of going to the guard room, they decided that they would get under the wire and start to wend their way up the mountain. And of course, any noise was heard immediately. And there was two people on a Lewis gun we had in those days, was the automatic weapon with a Berry pistol. And this particular gun challenged the noise, and there was no response. They put up a very light, saw these people, two people, crawling around, and opened fire. Killed the Royal Army Ordnance Corps fellow. The Royal Barks chap jumped over the cliff and saved himself. I think he sort of grazed himself, and that was about the extent of his injuries. But it was just a stupid action of some young lieutenant who may have had some drink or something and, you know, led this poor lad astray. And the consequences were rather serious.
Did any other accidents occur?
Yes. There was a friend of mine, in fact, a lad called Gibbons, who was in the battalion shooting team, a very good shot. You might think that all infantrymen are good shot, but some are better than others, obviously. And he was on duty in his slit or his trench on this particular occasion, and he saw a flashing of light up in the hills and started to think to himself that it was some Arabs signalling one another across the hills. So he spoke. You always had somebody with you, you were never on your own. So I said to this other chap, he said, I think we better do something about this. So he shot at this object that he saw, and unfortunately it was a poor shepherd herder looking after a sheep, in fact, and he killed him, which was once again unfortunate. It was one of the things that could quite well happen under a situation like that, you know, a soldier being in a position where he thought something of military action was taking place and felt that he should do something about it.
Did any consequences come of it?
No, he was congratulated, in fact, on good shooting. Of course, there would have been a little bit of argy-bargy between the locals and the military authorities, which would have been overcome, I suppose. But very unpleasant, but there you are. It was one of the things that does happen. And unfortunately, it's all part and parcel of that sort of life. But, you know, it was our growing up as well and being trained by virtue of a situation that was happening there, and it's just part and parcel of a soldier's training, isn't it? All these things are making a young soldier into an older soldier, a more matured soldier, a better trained soldier to do the job that he's joined up to do. And although his jobs may be very varied in, you know, not necessary on the battlefield. They can be on IS duties that I've told you about. Happened when the trouble happened out in town, when you had to take on civilian roles as a military force, where the civilians couldn't cope with it, they had to hand over to the military, and they were all part and parcel of your job.
Wasn't there another accident when an NCO was shot in the leg?
Yes, there was. This very unfortunate. We had a Corporal Smith, who's a very, very good NCO, very good soldier. He was second in command of the guard. The guard commander was away, and one of the guard, a lad called McGlusky, it tells you his name. His name tells you he was Irish, needless to say. Not that there's any anything wrong with that. Anyway, for some unknown reason, he was twirling a revolver in his hand and around on his finger like John Wayne might well do in the Cowboys. And Corporal Smith warned him to put it down, and whether or not he sort of went to stop or something, the thing went off, I don't know, but he shot the corporal in the leg, who eventually lost his leg, unfortunately. And I still see this Corporal Smith now, but never have heard McGlusky again. He probably got shot in the war or something, got killed somewhere, I don't know. Never saw or heard of him again.
Was life much of a strain whilst you were on active service in Palestine?
Yes, it was, because there were too few troops, too many jobs. So consequently, there was a stress and strain of doing one thing, coming back, having to do another, which would normally have been done by other people, had you been at full strength, for instance. But it was things that we expected we would have to do, and they were accepted. And as I said earlier on, the morale of our battalion was very high, very good, and we done the job and got on with it. With the moan, with the beef, you know, everyone has a moan of the beef, you're entitled to that. And it's pretty good. But you have a happy moaner and a regular moaner. Well, the regular moaner's usually kicked out of it anyway. The happy moaner goes on moaning and makes everyone laugh. And he's probably an essential part of army life, really, you know. And, yes, very good.
Did you suffer from a lack of sleep?
Well, I suppose the answer to that must be yes. But because of our fitness, and the way that we were trained and trying to do our job, it never seemed to affect us. You can't go on forever without sleep, because if you do, you're going to lose a certain amount of your ability to do things right. And of course, sleep was rationed out, so you got your fair share of whatever it was going. But generally speaking, I think you must have suffered because of it, because of the lack of sleep. But it didn't seem to affect us in any way at all. We used to, as I say, get on with the job, do it fairly cheerfully, and I think enjoy it. Yeah, I do. Very good.